hormones. It's a very complex topic. In fact, I think it's an inflated topic. And I have an interesting take on hormones when it comes to health, when it comes to body composition, how hormones influence fat loss and muscle growth. There is two sides to this argument. There's the side of hormones are everything. Hormones matter a ton for body composition changes, for health, for all this stuff, right? And they do. Your hormones play a vital role in your mood, in your health, in your longevity, in so many different factors, in your skin health, your metabolism, as well as the amount of muscle you maintain on your body as men age and testosterone dips down. Obviously, they lose muscle tissue. As we get older and thyroid suppresses, it becomes an influencing factor on our metabolism slowing down. So it does matter. However, on the same token, if you have super optimal hormone levels, but still within the normal average reference range, it's not going to make a big difference. Welcome to the Tailored Life Podcast. This is the podcast for average people who want to achieve above average results, live above average lives, and do it all in above average bodies. I am your host, Cody McBroom, an above average dude who has accomplished some above average things, but is constantly chasing the above average life. And that is the tailored life. Today, we're going to dive into hormones. Hormones is a fun topic. It's an interesting topic. It's a very complex topic. In fact, I think it's an inflated topic. Maybe that's not the right word. What I'm getting at here is it's a topic that is, it's been a buzzword for a while. It's been something that people rant and rave about. There's a lot of gurus out there who talk about hormones quite a bit. And I have an interesting take on hormones when it comes to health, when it comes to body composition, things like that. Today, we're going to be specifically talking about how hormones influence fat loss and muscle growth, because that's what we do. That's my main career. That's my main niche. That's my main specialty is I would say I'm a body transformation specialist. I'm an expert in transforming the everyday person's body, building muscle, burning fat, like that's what we do. And hormones do play a big role in that. Now, I think it's an inflated topic, if that is the right word, or maybe an exaggerated thing, because a lot of people make it seem like it's a bigger deal than it needs to be. So for example, most people say that hormones influence fat loss and muscle growth to a greater degree than they actually do. And it's hard to pinpoint this specifically because it is a double-edged sword. If we consider the fact that steroids are typically hormone, literally, or there's things that influence our hormones greatly, we can agree with that, right? Like if somebody takes hormone, synthetic hormones, they take exogenous hormones, they take performance enhancement drugs, steroids, whether we're talking about testosterone literally, or we're talking about IGF-1 growth hormone factor, we're talking about insulin, we're talking about all kinds of stuff. People take thyroid hormone for medical reasons, just like they do TRT, but bodybuilders also take testosterone, much like TRT. Right? TRT is a lesser degree because it is testosterone replacement therapy, meaning a doctor is prescribing you with testosterone replacement therapy at a small amount when it's done properly. It's given to you in small doses because it's primarily there to bump up your levels that are not in a good place, right? They're inefficient, they're suboptimal, and you are below the average person. Your hormones, your testosterone specifically as a man usually, but women supplement with TRT as well at times for other reasons. I mean, for the same reason, their testosterone's low, but they need it for some differing reasons compared to men or just in a lesser degree than men. But the point is that a doctor will prescribe you TRT, testosterone replacement therapy, as a way to bring your levels up to normal, to where they should be as a normal human being, much like somebody would take thyroid medication. You are taking thyroid medication if you have an inefficient thyroid, whether you have hypo or hyperthyroidism, you're taking a prescribed medication to help your thyroid. That is a hormone, literally. The reason I say this is because if you look at a bodybuilder, they will 2, 3, 4, sometimes even 10x the amount of testosterone they are taking compared to the prescription of a doctor for TRT in order to maximize what that hormone can do for their muscle. Much like they will also supplement with thyroid medication or thyroid hormone in a different reason. They don't need thyroid medication because they have a bad thyroid from an autoimmune related disease or like Hashimoto's, for example, which is an autoimmune related thyroid disorder, or because they genetically speaking have a deactive or dysfunctional thyroid. Point being, they will take it because as they diet and they go into a deeper and deeper calorie deficit and they lose more body fat, their thyroid hormone gets suppressed. And so when your thyroid hormone gets suppressed, you can supplement with thyroid and you can help that so that you continue to lose fat and you don't suppress your thyroid, which has a big influence on suppressing your metabolism. And if we can mitigate the suppression of our metabolism while dieting, guess what? We continue to lose fat. So same reason why they would take insulin, because insulin can help shuttle nutrients into the muscle tissue and so on and so forth, which we'll get into today, all this stuff. But the point is that there is two sides to this argument. There's the side of hormones are everything. Hormones matter a ton for body composition changes, for health, for all this stuff, right? And they do. Your hormones play a vital role in your mood, in your health, in your longevity, in so many different factors, in your skin health, the amount of your metabolism, as well as the amount of muscle you maintain on your body. As men age and testosterone dips down, obviously they lose muscle tissue. As we get older and thyroid suppresses, it becomes an influencing factor on our metabolism slowing down, so on and so forth, right? So it does matter. Absolutely matters. However, on the same token, if you have super optimal hormone levels, but still within the normal average reference range, it's not going to make a big difference, right? So if you're on the low end of thyroid or testosterone or anything, you know, sex hormone related, versus the mid to higher range of these hormones within the normal physiological range, right? That is per, you know, lab test reference ranges, we're not going to see a huge difference, right? We're not going to see a massive change in your body composition. So another good example of this would be looking specifically at testosterone. If you take a male who is at, you know, the reference range, let's say, I believe it's like around 300 to 800 or 900, let's say, for just like the mid normal range. If a man is at 300 versus a man being at 700 or 800 towards the top of it, you're not going to see a massive difference in muscle, right? They will build muscle better for sure, but it's not going to be a huge difference. Now, if you take that same guy and you push him towards 1200, 1500, 2000 milligrams per deciliter, which is the measurement, the metric to measure with when it comes to testosterone levels, you're going to see a huge difference. They're going to build a lot of muscle, but that's a super physiological range, right? And so the reason I'm doing this right now, because I'm trying to provide context before I go into the actual podcast where I'm going to break down these different hormones, because hormones absolutely matter for body composition change. If you want to lose fat and build muscle, hormones matter. They partially matter because if your hormones are optimal, you're going to be healthier, and a healthier body is going to be more resilient. It's going to be have a better immune system. It's going to be stronger. It's going to be more easily adaptable, right? It's going to be cooperative with the targeted results you're after. So if you're chasing a diet plan or you're chasing muscle growth through training, your body being healthy is going to help you do that, right? The physical follows the physiological. So hormones are absolutely important for health, for longevity, for immune function, for skin, hair, nails, for all these different cosmetic or aesthetic purposes. They are also helpful because they influence our metabolism. They influence our ability to maintain and or build muscle tissue. They do a lot of things. Hormones are very, very important. However, if we are within the normal physiological range, we're not going to see these massive changes in our body compositions unless we supplement with steroids or synthetic or exogenous hormones, which is supplementing with the hormone that is not already created at an optimal level within our body. And when we do that, we go into what's called a super physiological range. And when we bring our hormones into a super physiological range, we absolutely see massive changes in our body composition. Now, for the context of this podcast, because we're not going to go into super physiological discussion, I want to make this very clear, because there is benefits to improving your hormones. And that's why I wrote a full article and guide on the website. It's completely free. It's called How Hormones Influence Fat Loss and Muscle Growth. So I wrote that. It's on the website. You can click the link in the description. I'll put it in the description of this podcast as well, so you can go check that out. It's a great article. It's going to teach you a lot. But I wanted to provide this context before diving into this podcast, which is going to be like an audiobook version of the article, because I think it's important to understand that I don't want you to take the information I'm going to give you and expect to get steroid-like results. If you optimize your testosterone, your insulin levels, your growth hormone, all these different things, you are going to function better. You're going to be stronger. You're going to build or maintain more muscle. You're going to burn more fat. You're going to have a healthier body. All of that. It is 1,000,000% true. It is all going to happen. However, you're not going to look like you took steroids. And I want to make that very clear. It's like creatine, right? If you take creatine, you're not going to wake up jacked. You're not going to take this creatine and be like, oh my gosh, I'm a monster. I'm so strong. I'm so buff. It doesn't work like that. However, if you take creatine at a normal dose for months and months and months on end, you're going to progressively overload in your training a little bit better every single time. And when you stack up that 1% increase on how much you're lifting over months and months and months of training, guess what? You are going to be more jacked and you are going to be leaner and burn more fat. And that's what you need to think about with hormones. Optimizing your hormones can improve your mood, can improve your sleep, can improve your stress management, your recovery, your training, your muscle tissue, your metabolism, your fat loss. Hormones are extremely important. They're not going to be an immediate change. They're not going to provide an immediate change to your physique like steroids would. Okay. So that's the pre-context for this podcast. Now, this podcast is, let me take a sip of Rockstar real quick. Sorry. You guys know I got to stay caffeinated. Especially with me, I'm like 3 weeks out from my first show. So I'm doing this one early while I still have a lot of energy. But this podcast is going to be an audiobook version of the article. So if you like this podcast and you want to read through it, you want to see some links, you want to see some studies, you want to be a hyperlink to guides and other articles we've written on similar topics, head over to tailoredcoachingmethod.com/blog or click the link in the description of this podcast. Second, if this type of content really resonates with you, if you enjoy it, if you're listening to this and you're like, man, I get so much out of these deep dive guides that he does on the podcast and such, head over to tailoredcoachingmethod.com/guides because we have 4 or 5 different free guides that go extremely in depth. They're eBooks. They're completely free. You can learn so much about different topics by downloading those because they are 1,000,000% free. And then 2 last things. If you need help personally, because you're like, this makes sense. I love this content. It's helping me a ton. I'm getting educated, but I want somebody to hold my hand, guide the way, and just tell me what to do so I can get the best results possible. And I can optimize my hormones and my nutrition and my training, all that stuff. I have 2 amazing things that you can take up on, and that is going to be coaching, one-on-one coaching with a sports nutritionist and online trainer on our staff. You can head to tailoredcoachingmethod.com/online-coaching or just go to the homepage at tailoredcoachingmethod.com and click the yellow button, also linked in the description of this podcast. Or you can head to thetailoredtrainer.com and you can download the Tailored Trainer app, which is only $29 a month, and you get a 7-day free trial. And that's going to be just training, no nutrition, but the app is out. It is awesome. We're getting a lot of great feedback and we're constantly making improvements to it. So head over to thetailoredtrainer.com. Now, what I'm going to dive into from here on out is the actual article. I'm going to literally read the article for you. And this article is, like I said, this is going to be like the audiobook version of the guide. So tune in, listen in, and I'm going to take you through the guide on hormones. This is going to be how hormones influence fat loss and muscle growth. I'm going to read through it exactly as it's written. So this is literally like an audiobook. And I would love to know if you guys like this stuff. This is a lot of curated content. So as you can imagine, I didn't invent hormones, nor did I write a textbook on hormones. So we pull a lot of, and we gather and pull a lot of information from text, online research, textbooks, all kinds of stuff to put this together. It's very in depth and it's a pretty big article, and we don't go into any one hormone in massive detail, but we do have articles on, like specifically, we have 2 different articles just on testosterone. We have a full article on cortisol. We actually have 2 on that one too. We have research reviews with Brandon Roberts, our chief science officer, on these things too. So you can kind of scour through, and a lot of that is linked in this. But today I'm going to kind of give you an overview, a scientific overview and deep dive. I would say a brief deep dive because, again, This is probably going to be another 30 minutes or so of this podcast reading through this on each and every hormone that actually influences, for the most part, almost every hormone, because all hormones interact and work together. But this is going to be a deep dive into some of the primary hormones that actually help influence your body fat and muscle growth. So let's dive in. Now, achieving your fitness goals, whether it's shedding unwanted fat or gaining lean muscle, goes beyond just diet and exercise. The human body is a complex system regulated by various hormones that influence how we store and burn fat as well as build muscle. Understanding the interplay of these hormones can empower you to make smarter choices on your fitness journey. So in this podcast, we're going to deep dive into the science of how hormones impact fat loss and muscle growth. And I'm going to try to provide you with an evidence-based insight to maximize your results forever. So first, let's kind of comb through the different hormones we're going to cover today and give you a teaser or a preview into what's going to be discussed. So the first one is going to be insulin and the role of insulin in fat loss and muscle growth. Insulin, often associated with blood sugar regulation, plays a pivotal role in both fat loss and muscle growth, as well as general health. When you consume calories, especially carbohydrates, the body releases insulin to shuttle glucose into cells for energy. And glucose, for those who don't know, is just carbohydrates. It's the cell version of carbohydrates that gets stored in our body. We intake carbs in the diet, and the carbs turn into glucose and get shuttled into the muscle tissue, as well as other places like our blood and our liver. So there's liver glycogen, there's blood glucose, and there is muscle tissue glucose. However, chronically high insulin levels, primarily caused by a caloric surplus and a diet filled with poor quality food, can hinder fat loss by promoting fat storage. So here shortly, we'll explore how to manage insulin levels through the diet and the impact it has on muscle growth primarily. Number two is going to be cortisol, and we're going to talk about how to understand cortisol's impact on fat and muscle as well. Cortisol is the stress hormone, and it can significantly affect body composition. In response to stress, cortisol is released, leading to a downward trend in multiple other hormones. Chronically elevated cortisol levels can also potentially cause an increase in fat storage around the abdominal area, so around like the lower stomach. You can store more fat there when cortisol is elevated over a chronic period of time, so a long period of time consistently. However, research showing this occurring is limited and somewhat questionable because there's so few studies. And the primary reason individuals gain fat from higher cortisol levels is actually due to an inability to adhere to a deficit while being stressed. And we have a full research review breakdown from Dr. Brandon Roberts on this, and it kind of surprises a lot of people because we hear so much about how high cortisol levels, which is from stress, causes fat storage. But the primary reason that causes fat gain is actually just because people are stressed and therefore they have cravings and they want to consume more calories and they can't stick to a deficit. And that causes more fat storage. Moreover, cortisol can also break down muscle tissue for energy during prolonged periods of stress or from overtraining. We'll discuss stress management techniques in this podcast and training strategies to actually keep cortisol in check for optimal fat loss as well as muscle retention. Testosterone. Testosterone is a key hormone for muscle growth, and it's not just limited to men. While men have higher natural testosterone levels, women also produce this hormone at lower levels. Testosterone promotes protein synthesis, enhancing muscle repair and growth, which is why steroid-using bodybuilders typically take it, because it does increase protein synthesis, which allows more muscle maintenance during deficits and more growth during surpluses. We're going to explore the link between testosterone and muscle hypertrophy in this podcast and the importance of resistance training in boosting this essential hormone, as well as some other techniques that you can use naturally to increase testosterone. However, we have two full articles on testosterone written by Dr. Brandon Roberts that I think will paint a much more in-depth picture about that specific hormone if you are interested. And I'll link that in the, all those are linked in this article that I will link in the description. Next, we have leptin and ghrelin, which are the hormones that regulate our appetite. A lot of times people call these the hunger hormones or the primary metabolism hormones. The hormones leptin and ghrelin work together to regulate appetite. Leptin, produced by fat cells, signals the brain when we are full, while ghrelin, produced by the stomach, stimulates hunger. An imbalance in these hormones can lead to overeating and hinder fat loss efforts. We'll delve into strategies to maintain a healthy appetite regulation for better adherence to your nutrition plan, because at the end of the day, that is the primary thing that these two hormones are going to do. They're either going to cause you to overeat or not overeat, aka adhere to the diet or not adhere to the diet. Estrogen and progesterone and how they impact fat storage and muscle mass. For women, estrogen and progesterone levels fluctuate throughout the menstrual cycle, affecting how the body stores fat and builds muscle. Understanding these fluctuations can help women optimize their training and nutrition strategies based on their hormone phase. Estrogen and progesterone are also in the male body as well. However, with male physiology, estrogen and progesterone aren't nearly as important. Estrogen has some cardiovascular health benefits as well as respiratory things, which is often why we see women being able to recover between sets and reps a little bit quicker in their training. This is a theoretical guess, but we do see this anecdotally quite a bit in the strength world that women can recover faster. Some would say it's because they have less muscle tissue. Therefore, their training sets are done with less weight, and therefore they may just not need as much time to recover. However, knowing that estrogen has a cardiovascular and respiratory oxidative benefit, we also know that their aerobic systems are typically more robust and potentially can cause increased ability to recover faster. So it could be a combination of the both. Men still do have these hormones, as I said, but they just don't play as pivotal of a role in the hormone or the physiology of the human body with men as they do with women, much like testosterone plays a bigger role with men than it does women. And the last hormone we'll discuss is growth hormone and its effects on fat loss and muscle growth. Growth hormone is a powerful hormone that stimulates cell growth, reproduction, and regeneration. In fact, it's actually a key player in fat metabolism. And although it does also help with muscle development, for sure, especially through recovery purposes, a lot of people assume by the title, growth hormone, that it is purely just for building muscle. But it's not. It's actually a big player in fat loss. And we'll explore natural ways to enhance this growth hormone secretion and its potential benefits to your fitness goals. Now, let's discuss the first hormone in a little bit more depth as we kind of embark down this journey of how hormones influence fat loss and muscle growth. And again, remember that the goal with this podcast is to help you understand how you can optimize training, nutrition, supplementation, and really just overall lifestyle choices to just enhance your hormones and therefore get better results. And remember that everybody's hormone profile is pretty unique. And it really is. Like, if you're listening to this and you're not sure if things apply to you, or maybe it sounds confusing, or maybe it's not the way you thought it was based on how your body responds, I would highly recommend seeking out one of our coaches, or even just getting on a free strategy call, or reaching out to an endocrinologist if you really have some hormone stuff going on. Find a specialist, because there is a lot of individual variability, and it is impossible to teach you everything you need to know about your individual hormones in the length of a simple podcast. Now, the role of insulin in fat loss and muscle growth. Insulin is a hormone secreted by the pancreas in response to elevated blood glucose levels, typically after a meal. Its primary function is to regulate glucose metabolism, allowing cells to take in glucose and use it for energy, or store it as glycogen, which is stored glucose, stored carbohydrates. However, when you consume more calories than your body needs, which would be a calorie surplus, the excess glucose in your bloodstream triggers a higher release of insulin. In a calorie surplus, insulin promotes the storage of excess calories as fat in adipose tissue, which are fat cells. This process is known as lipogenesis. Furthermore, high insulin levels can hinder fat breakdown, which is lipolysis, right? So we have lipogenesis, which is the storage of fat into adipose tissue, which is fat tissue. And we have lipolysis, which is fat breakdown or fat burning. It's oxidizing the fat. So again, high insulin levels can potentially hinder fat breakdown, lipolysis, making it harder for the body to utilize stored fat as an energy source. This is why being in a calorie surplus can lead to fat storage and make fat loss more challenging. And I should probably add, this is why one of the reasons a calorie surplus can lead to fat storage and make fat loss more challenging. It really does kind of come down to the chicken before the egg kind of discussion here. Is high insulin levels causing fat to be stored, and that's why people are obese? Or does fat get stored and that causes higher insulin levels, which just doesn't help the process, right? So we can't say that high insulin levels cause obesity by any means. In fact, that's been debunked millions of times, and I want to make that very clear so that it doesn't sound like I am saying that right now. What I am saying is higher insulin levels on a chronic basis can hinder fat breakdown, because it can change the way your body is utilizing stored fat. It can make things more difficult, right? And sometimes we need to improve our insulin sensitivity, especially in the obese setting. When we get to a certain point, it's not nearly as important. And it is also not nearly as important if we are active and if we are at lower body fat levels. If we have a good amount of muscle tissue and we are active. In fact, if we are active and have a good amount of muscle tissue, even if you do have fat, you are going to be extremely healthy from a blood glucose and insulin level. Not extremely healthy. You're going to be more healthy than the average person from an insulin perspective, and you might not have these big issues, right? But however, to better manage insulin levels in general, because there are health components as well as supporting fat loss, your primary focus needs to be consistently adhering to a diet that falls within a calorie deficit and just ensuring that you are physically active regularly, especially with resistance training. This is because both a calorie deficit and regular exercise directly improves insulin sensitivity, as well as losing body fat, being in a calorie deficit, and building muscle, regular exercise, and specifically resistance training. Once again, that tension on the muscle is key because it helps build muscle, and that's what causes the direct improvement in insulin sensitivity. But both of which directly and indirectly actually help insulin levels be managed better. Beyond that, there are some simple habits you can focus on to help create a balanced and nutrient-dense diet that are going to help this as well. So even if you don't have a ton of muscle, even if you're not training a ton, even if you're just getting started, here are some of the dietary habits and strategies that can actually make a big difference. The first one is choosing complex carbs. And some of these are very obvious, but this is why they're so important. Some people just know it. It's like, hey, is broccoli healthy? Yeah. Why? Well, I don't know, right? So it's one of those things. But the first one is to choose complex carbs. Complex carbs are unprocessed carbohydrates typically, but typically they have higher fiber, right? So whole grains, vegetables, fruits, legumes like beans and such. These foods have a lower glycemic index, which doesn't really matter too much, but in general, a lower glycemic index causes a slower and more gradual rise in blood glucose levels, which results in a more controlled insulin response. The reason I said it doesn't matter about the lower glycemic index is not because the benefit of a lower and more gradual rise in blood glucose doesn't matter, but rather because lower glycemic index foods have kind of been debunked by the fact that you can add fiber or protein or fat to a high glycemic carb and it now becomes a low glycemic index food. So rather than a food, a carbohydrate being low glycemic index, you want to focus on a meal being lower glycemic index usually. However, if we're focusing on the fact that choosing complex carbs is the benefit, we still want to choose what would be called quote unquote low glycemic carbs, like whole grains, like oats, whole wheat bread, sweet potatoes, vegetables high in fiber, fruits high in fiber, so on and so forth. The next one is very similar to what I just mentioned with pairing foods in a meal. Pair carbohydrates with protein and healthy fats. Combining carbohydrates with protein and healthy fats can slow down the absorption of carbohydrates and glucose and help stabilize blood sugar levels during after a meal. So postprandial is what they would call that. And this is the same reason why complex carbs are helpful. But if you don't have a complex carb, say you choose white rice, which is totally fine, you can simply add some protein and healthy fats, or our next topic, fiber-rich foods, to that meal, and it will improve the absorption of that glucose and help stabilize blood glucose levels during and after a meal, avoiding that hypoglycemia where you start to get shaky, right? Fiber-rich foods is the next topic or habit that you can instill, and it's just including plenty of fiber in your diet, plain and simple. I recommend including 10 to 15 grams of fiber per 1,000 calories, leaning on the higher side for anybody who really needs to focus on this or just getting enough fiber for better digestion. And the last thing is regular meal timing. Consistent meal timing can help regulate insulin levels and prevent large fluctuations in that blood sugar, which tends to help the role of insulin in general and improve your insulin sensitivity. Now, what about the role of insulin in muscle growth? Insulin also plays a significant role in promoting muscle growth. After a resistance training workout, your muscles are primed to absorb nutrients to support and repair growth. This is why a lot of times people talked about the anabolic window. You got to get to amino acids or protein and carbs ASAP, right? Because insulin helps shuttle amino acids, which are the building blocks of proteins, and glucose into muscle cells, which enhances protein synthesis and glycogen replenishment. This does aid in muscle growth and muscle recovery because protein is required for tissue development and glucose, which is carbohydrates, are required to nourish, replenish, and hydrate a muscle. And just remember, muscle tissue is 60 to 65% water. So we really want to get more water into the tissue, the muscle tissue, in order to not only deliver nutrients to the muscle tissue, sodium, electrolytes, amino acids, stuff like that, but also because that keeps our muscle hydrated and prevents cramps, improves recovery, and allows better performance. Performance leads to more volume leads to more growth. To optimize the anabolic effects of an anabolic meaning muscle building effects of insulin, some athletes and bodybuilders strategically consume carbs and protein post-workout. And again, this is known as the anabolic window. However, it's important to note that the anabolic window might not be as critical as we once believed, and overall daily nutrient intake is far more important for muscle growth in the long term. Usually you have a 1 to 3 window to really optimize that, and you're not going to lose muscle unless you go several hours post-workout. I would even argue with like 10 plus hours post-workout if you're going to lose muscle tissue. Now, what we're also trying to do here is optimize hormones to maximize muscle growth. And so for that purpose, I still do recommend getting some kind of nutrients in the diet, amino acids, proteins, and carbohydrates or glucose post-workout within 3 hours. Now, another benefit to insulin that is often undiscussed is its inverse relationship with the catabolic stress hormone cortisol. This hormone can cause muscle breakdown, which is clearly unfavorable when the goal is to build new muscle tissue. However, when we spike insulin through the consumption of both calories and primarily carbohydrates, insulin acts against cortisol by blunting down its response and impact. Therefore, we can intentionally spike insulin through the consumption of carbohydrates and calories as a way to lower cortisol, the stress hormone, at different times. We're going to save some of the cortisol talk for the next topic because we are going to dive into that specifically. But overall, balancing insulin levels through proper nutrition can not only support fat loss, but also aid in muscle growth and recovery. However, the main driver of insulin as a muscle building hormone is through the process of direct nutrient delivery to the muscle, cell, and tissue. And this is why bodybuilders who are competitive and use PEDs, performance enhancement drugs, they actually use insulin as a drug in order to drive more carbohydrates and nutrients into the muscle cell. And so this is really important because a lot of times, especially after the discussion on insulin for fat loss, and although everything I stated in that part of this section is accurate and true, it's important to know that the role of insulin for fat loss isn't nearly as big of a deal as a lot of people would make it seem. There's a lot of gurus out there who say high insulin levels cause obesity. High insulin levels are going to stop you from losing body fat or burning fat or anything like that. And that's just not true. There is a lot of bodybuilders who literally inject pure insulin, which I do not recommend doing, into their body in order to store more carbohydrates in the muscle cell. So as long as you are resistance training and you have muscle tissue, insulin is actually a great hormone. It's a helpful hormone because it helps shuttle nutrients into a place that can allow you to rebuild tissue, build new tissue, and support better energy. So we just have to manage it properly and we need to be active. And if you're listening to this podcast, I imagine that you're probably pretty active training and working towards a body composition goal yourself. The next hormone we're going to discuss is cortisol. Cortisol is a energy utilization hormone, essentially. Cortisol, often referred to as the stress hormone, is produced by the adrenal glands and plays a vital role in the body's stress response. In times of stress, cortisol is released to mobilize energy stores and ensure the body has enough fuel to cope with the perceived threat. Think of the saber-toothed tiger in the caveman days. When a saber-toothed tiger is coming after you, your adrenaline increases, your nervous system fires up into what's called sympathetic nervous system drive, and cortisol, the stress hormone, increases quite a bit as well, and this plays a massive role in mobilizing energy, aka taking energy and utilizing it to perform. So if you have to sprint and run and you need to shuttle glucose and energy to your muscles or to your body and your limbs to go, cortisol is going to help you do that because, again, it's a hormone that can help with energy utilization. While cortisol primarily targets carbohydrates and in carbohydrate metabolism or mobilization, it can also contribute to the breakdown of protein, which is muscle tissue, into amino acids. This process is known as gluconeogenesis, where amino acids or proteins can be converted into glucose for energy. During prolonged periods of stress or intense exercise without proper nutrition, cortisol may break down muscle tissue to provide the body with an additional energy source. However, there are also studies correlating higher cortisol levels with higher testosterone levels. This is believed to be because training harder, which is what causes muscle growth, increases cortisol levels. And as we know, if you have more muscle because you've trained harder over periods of time, you're probably also going to have more testosterone because there is a direct link to men with higher, more strength training, more overall strength and more muscle tissue and higher testosterone levels. So high cortisol is actually correlated in some degree with high amounts of testosterone. And this is where it gets kind of confusing because if cortisol can break down muscle tissue, how is it that cortisol allows us to build more muscle and more testosterone at times? Well, the reason is because temporary fluctuations in rises in cortisol is actually really good. For example, The impact it has on fat and muscle during exercise explains this. During vigorous exercise, like really hard and intense training, cortisol levels typically rise as part of the body's natural response to physical stress. And while cortisol can break down muscle tissue, it's important to note that this process is generally not a primary source of energy during exercise. The body primarily relies on stored glycogen and fatty acids to fuel intense workouts. So unless you're extremely shredded or extremely stressed out and chronically dieting, it's probably not something to worry about. However, cortisol can indirectly impact fat metabolism during exercise as well. High cortisol levels are associated with increased appetite and cravings for calorie-dense foods, so highly palatable foods, especially those in high carbohydrates and fats, which is highly palatable foods. Consuming excessive calories due to cortisol-driven appetite, i.e. stress cravings or stress eating, can offset the caloric deficit created from your diet or exercise routine, potentially hindering fat loss efforts, obviously, because you are no longer in a calorie deficit, which we know is the key driver for fat loss. And although there is research supporting the idea that chronically elevated cortisol levels can also cause some fat storage around the abdominal region, the primary reason for cortisol, which I've already mentioned, in causing fat storage is likely due to those effects of increased appetite and lower adherence to the diet because your inhibition drops. If you were stressed, it's harder to make positive decisions. But again, cortisol has effects on other hormones, which can also impact building muscle or fat loss. Because chronically elevated cortisol levels can negatively impact the balance of the other hormones in the body, which might be the reason cortisol actually hinders muscle building and fat loss. For example, testosterone. High cortisol levels have been linked to reduced testosterone production in the short term, which is critical for muscle growth and recovery. Again, high testosterone can also be correlated to high cortisol, which makes this pretty confusing, but it's all about context. Who is the person in the study? Second one is growth hormone. Prolonged stress and high cortisol levels may suppress growth hormone secretion, which is essential for muscle repair and growth. Insulin sensitivity is a third one. Elevated cortisol levels can impair insulin sensitivity, making it more challenging for the body to utilize carbohydrates effectively and potentially promote more fat storage than muscle growth. And last but not least, thyroid. The thyroid gland is very important in terms of a healthy metabolism or metabolic rate. However, the T4 to T3 conversion, which is a primary thyroid conversion to help improve your metabolic rate and your metabolism speed, but that could be negatively impacted from chronically elevated cortisol levels over time. And that's like the big impact, negative impact we see here. It's from prolonged cortisol elevation and its negative impact on stress and recovery. Because elevated cortisol levels over an extended period of time can hinder recovery and lead to overtraining or burnout. When cortisol remains high, it can disrupt the body's natural repair and regeneration process, leading to fatigue, muscle soreness, and decreased performance. By managing cortisol levels, you can create an environment that's actually conducive to muscle growth as well as fat loss and just overall well-being while reducing the risk of negative health impacts associated with chronic stress, because there are many other negative health impacts associated with stress. Because remember, I'm just talking about fat loss and muscle growth, not anything else. To wrap up cortisol, here are 7 steps that you can just use to better manage your cortisol levels. First, implement stress-reducing techniques. Meditation, yoga, deep breathing, exercises, spending time in nature, just downtime. Stress management is key. Proper nutrition, which we already covered, but ensuring you have a well-balanced diet with adequate macros and micros to support your energy needs and recovery. I would also say part of this proper nutrition means not going low carb. We want carbohydrates in the diet because they help blunt that cortisol response. They help manage stress better. 3, sleep quality. You got to prioritize high quality sleep if you want your cortisol levels to be balanced and in recovery to be good. 4, exercise intensity and volume. You got to avoid excessive training volume and intensity, as overtraining can lead to sustained cortisol elevation because you stay in a chronically stressed state. 5 is nutrient timing. If you consumed a balanced meal with protein and carbs, not just after your workouts, but in a specific fashion throughout the day, your body gets used to the nutrient timing, can improve your circadian rhythm as well as insulin sensitivity and stress management, which all lead to reducing cortisol levels. 6 is limit stimulant intake. Obviously, if you are consuming caffeine or stimulants constantly, you probably need to lower those if you are stressed or have chronically elevated cortisol levels. And then last but not least, if you still struggle with stuff or you can't figure out how to implement this stuff, professional guidance is key. Get a coach. Coaches can help you personalize this whole process. But to wrap up cortisol before moving into the next subject, which is testosterone, it's important to understand that cortisol isn't necessarily bad. Cortisol wakes us up in the morning. Cortisol can be an explosive energy source to help us train hard. Cortisol is associated with muscle growth and testosterone levels and stronger physical bodies. And this is because you can't not elevate your cortisol levels if you are training hard enough to grow and to burn fat. However, you have to manage them after the workout. Our goal is to utilize cortisol as a way to train harder, but we don't want to keep it elevated because that's how we essentially don't recover and can no longer train harder later on in the month, the year, and just for a consistent basis. So the big key here is understanding it's a double-edged sword, which we actually have an article called The Double-Edged Sword of Cortisol for this reason, and that will be linked in the description of this podcast. But it's about managing it, utilizing it to build more muscle and train harder while also managing it to improve recovery so you can continue to train hard and recover from that training. Hey, sorry to interrupt this podcast, but I briefly want to mention my company, Tailored Coaching Method. I founded Tailored Coaching Method in 2017 as a way to help people lose weight, build muscle, and transform their lives because I began to see that every other area of people's lives started to change and get better and be more successful when they got in shape and they felt better in their skin. And since then, I've built an entire team of world-class coaches who help people around the world transform right before our eyes. And because you're listening to this podcast, I gotta imagine you wanna get in shape too, or you're already in shape and you're looking to take it to the next level. Either way, we are the company for you. We specialize in body composition and we can help you no matter where you are in your fitness journey. So if you want help, you want expert coaching, and you want to finally get to the next level so you can start actually looking like you work out, head over to tailoredcoachingmethod.com and click the big yellow button front and center on the screen. Or simply go to the description of this podcast and click that link and apply today. The strategy call is completely free and it gives us a chance to get to know you, you a chance to get to know us, and by the end of it, we'll decide if it's a good fit and move forward. All right, let's get back to the show. Testosterone's role in muscle growth is definitely a more well-known or obvious one because it's been so closely associated with muscle growth for so many different reasons, right? But it's essential to first note that while testosterone plays a significant role in muscle growth and other physiological and psychological aspects, it's not the sole determinant of fitness progress, strength, or muscle. Genetics, training program design, nutrition, sleep, and all kinds of overall lifestyle factors all contribute to you getting results and significantly building muscle. But what is testosterone's impact, literally? And the first one, and one of the most profound ones in regards to muscle growth, is its impact on muscle protein synthesis and muscle building or muscle breakdown as a whole, right? The ratio of protein synthesis to breakdown specifically. Testosterone is an androgenic hormone primarily produced in the testes in men and in smaller amounts in the ovaries in women and adrenal glands. It plays a crucial role in muscle growth due to its effects on muscle protein synthesis more than anything else. Testosterone binds to androgen receptors on muscle cells, which triggers an increased rate in muscle protein synthesis. This means that more muscle proteins are created, essentially, which leads to muscle repair and growth after exercise-induced muscle damage, so the actual breakdown of tissue from training. Higher testosterone levels support muscle hypertrophy and increased size for those who don't. I use hypertrophy a lot, but I was talking to somebody the other day and realized that not everybody knows what hypertrophy is. In a little side tangent here, it's also very interesting that a lot of people say hypertrophy, which means muscle growth. But if you think of it, everybody says fat loss. Nobody says lipolysis. Lipolysis is the fat oxidation process, fat burning, right? So if you're talking about burning fat or losing fat, usually just say burning fat or losing fat. Somebody told you they're doing a lipolysis diet, that would be weird. They say fat loss diet. But all kinds of times, people say they're eating for hypertrophy, training for hypertrophy, dieting for hypertrophy, on a hypertrophy plan, all kinds of stuff, right? Instead of a muscle growth plan. Anyway, back to the actual hormone podcast. Higher testosterone levels, again, support muscle hypertrophy and increased muscle size by enhancing the body's ability to repair and rebuild muscle tissue after intense resistance training of all kinds. This is one of the reasons why men who naturally have higher testosterone levels than women typically have an advantage in muscle building. There's also some other roles and reasons why men typically have more advantages in muscle building, and one of them is just joints and leverages and the actual genetic size of potential size, I should say, of muscles, right? They have certain muscles are going to be just larger in general, especially on the upper body. And that means there's more capacity for growth. There's more room to build, right? But testosterone is a very large reason why they build more muscle. Now, what is the testosterone's role in muscle growth for women? Well, while women have lower natural testosterone levels compared to men, testosterone still plays a role in muscle building for females. Women possess androgen receptors on muscle cells as well, and even though the absolute levels of testosterone are lower, the hormone can still contribute to muscle protein synthesis and growth. However, due to the hormonal differences, women generally develop less muscle mass than men under the same training conditions. Now, how can we do something about this? Well, here are six specific training and nutrition strategies to positively impact testosterone levels naturally. The first one, and probably the most obvious for most people listening, is resistance training. Engaging in regular strength training of any kind, really, but particularly the compound exercises and those that can use progressive overload over time, which would be, you know, squats, deadlift, bench press, heavy rows, chin-ups, things that you can add weight to and continually progress and get better at or stronger with over time, have been shown to have the greatest effect from a training perspective to increase testosterone levels in both men and women. High-intensity interval training, which is the second one on this list, has also been associated with the increased testosterone production, making some kind of HIIT workouts or HIIT cardio in general potentially more valuable as an addition to a workout routine. Know that this can be a double-edged sword, though, because too much high-intensity training can also cause elevated levels of cortisol, and that added stress can actually negatively impact the positive results, leading to a net benefit of nothing, essentially. Number three, adequate protein intake. Consuming sufficient protein is essential for supporting muscle protein synthesis, and therefore it also can contribute to more muscle mass, both of which can contribute to better testosterone levels. So just aiming for a protein-rich diet in general, like we often recommend on the podcast, filled with things, sources like meats, fish, poultry, eggs, dairy, all that kind of stuff, is going to be a really good idea. Number four is healthy fats, including these healthy fats in the diet, such as those found in avocados, nuts, seeds, olive oil, all of which can support hormonal production, including testosterone, much of which people know because often fat is associated as the nutrient specifically for hormonal improvement and balance. But this is especially true with saturated fats. However, it's also clear throughout the research that too much saturated fat can have a negative impact on your health. So you need enough to support sex hormones, but too much can be a negative contributor to health measurements. Number five is sufficient caloric intake. You just have to ensure that you're not in a severe calorie deficit, really, because that can impact testosterone levels quite a bit. As we know, when people are consistently losing weight over time, especially as extreme as a bodybuilder per se, so for somebody like myself who's in a contest prep, my testosterone levels are generally going to get lower and lower as I get closer and closer to the end of prep and leading into the show. On the contrary, having too much stored body fat can also have and cause a drop in testosterone levels. Therefore, a calorie deficit can be a positive thing that contributes to better testosterone levels as well if you are overweight. In either case, the calorie deficit shouldn't be prolonged over too long of a time course or be too aggressive. The point is you should be lean. Unsustainably lean and shredded is probably not the best route for supporting testosterone levels. Neither is a low calorie diet, but a moderate calorie diet can be beneficial. A moderate caloric deficit, I should say, can be beneficial or not cause as great of an impact. However, when you drop calories too low, it can impact it or you get too lean. On the contrary, too much calories can be negative for, like, a big caloric surplus can sometimes be negative for testosterone, but especially when that surplus causes too much fat storage, because having a large amount, I should say, of fat on your body is going to negatively impact testosterone levels. And the last one is sleep, which is pretty obvious, but prioritizing getting enough sleep, especially quality sleep, can really help testosterone production. But more importantly, insufficient sleep can suppress testosterone production. And I say it that way because if you get a really long night of sleep, it doesn't necessarily mean that you are going to all of a sudden be supercharged with testosterone. That's not how it works. But when you don't get enough sleep consistently, it can play a big role in dropping your testosterone levels. So at the end of the day, we can see that testosterone is pretty important. But what are the indirect physiological and psychological impacts after looking at all this stuff? Like, why does this really matter? And the first one is motivation and confidence. Testosterone has been associated with increased motivation and self-confidence, which can positively influence workout performance and adherence. When we have more motivation and especially confidence in the gym, we're going to push it harder in the gym, and that's going to help a lot. The second one is positive aggression. We often hear that, you know, steroids can cause roid rage and aggression, but the truth is oftentimes it has the opposite effect, and people can become actually really emotional. So a lot of times steroids just enhance one's actual aggression levels or emotional state in general. If somebody's really just a big teddy bear and very emotional, wears his heart on his sleeve, and he takes a bunch of steroids, he's probably going to be more emotional and cry more often and want to watch romantic comedies, literally. If somebody's already an angry person, steroids could probably make him a more angry person. And that's why I put positive aggression, because in controlled amounts, testosterone can enhance competitiveness and aggression during workouts, potentially leading to greater effort and intensity. And this is especially true in natural amounts. So when we are in a natural physiological amount of high testosterone levels, so again, not using steroids and not going over into super physiological ranges, this can be a very positive thing, leading to more good, hard effort and intensity in the gym. And the last one is recovery and mood. Adequate testosterone levels may contribute to better recovery from workouts and an improved mood, reducing the risk of overtraining and burnout. Always remember, though, again, after each of these, I'm probably going to say something along these lines, but individual responses to training and nutrition, as well as any type of hormonal optimization, can vary, and it really does depend on the person. So you have to understand that you are always going to be different than every other person. But in general, we know that testosterone is extremely important for muscle growth. It's extremely important for men's motivation, especially, but it can also play a role in things like memory and mood and all kinds of stuff. So it's important, especially for men, to have higher testosterone levels if possible. And we want to use all these natural things that we can, primarily a good diet, sleep, low body fat levels, but not too low, high amounts of muscle mass without having to take steroids, good sleep, stress management, and maybe some supplements like creatine and ashwagandha and stress management stuff. But there's no direct test booster supplement that's really going to help much at all. Next, we have leptin and ghrelin, the hunger hormones. Leptin is a hormone produced by fat cells and plays a crucial role in long-term appetite regulation. Its primary function is to signal the brain when we have sufficient energy stores and are satiated. When fat cells release leptin into the bloodstream, it travels to the brain and binds to specific receptors, informing the brain that food, that enough energy is available and reducing appetite. In essence, leptin acts as a satiety hormone, helping to control food intake and prevent overeating. Ghrelin, often called the hunger hormone, is produced primarily in the stomach and, to a lesser extent, in other tissues. Its role is opposite of leptin. Ghrelin levels rise before meals and trigger hunger signals to the brain, stimulating appetite and prompting us to eat. After eating, ghrelin levels decrease, contributing to the feeling of fullness and satisfaction. So what is the impact of an imbalance in these hormones leptin and ghrelin can have? Well, the first one is leptin resistance, which occurs when the brain becomes less responsive to the effects of leptin. The condition can develop due to chronic inflammation, overeating highly palatable foods, so think like fast food, junk food, high fat, high carb foods, and excess body fat. As a result, despite having elevated levels of leptin, the brain doesn't receive the signal of satiety, leading to increased appetite and a reduced ability to control food intake. And this is why, as we gain body fat, leptin actually increases, because again, leptin is a hormone produced by the fat cells. However, if we get too fat and overweight, we are going to actually create what's called leptin resistance, which is when the brain stops becoming responsive to the effects. This causes, again, increased appetite and a reduced ability to control food intake. So you start to have less ability to control how much food you're eating and more likely stay in a caloric surplus, continually gaining weight. And this can be very dangerous for our health. What about ghrelin? There's something called ghrelin dysregulation, which kind of ties right into leptin resistance. Various factors, including sleep deprivation, stress, and irregular eating patterns, can disrupt the normal fluctuations of ghrelin levels, leading to ghrelin dysregulation. When ghrelin is dysregulated, hunger signals may be inconsistent, and people may experience more frequent and intense feelings of hunger, even when they don't necessarily need to eat. An imbalance in these hunger-relating hormones, both leptin and ghrelin, can contribute to overeating, difficulty adhering to a nutrition plan, and the obvious weight gain. And again, when we have ghrelin dysregulation and leptin resistance, usually from bad lifestyle factors and gaining too much body fat, we end up not being able to stay full, always experiencing appetite increases and cravings, and a reduced mental ability to actually control what's going on. And this leads to consistently gaining weight and making it very difficult to maintain a healthy weight or start losing weight once you're in that position, which is what we're going to get into next. How do we fix this, right? Strategies to maintain healthy appetite regulation. Well, the first one is balanced and nutrient-dense meals, much like I talked about in the cortisol or insulin strategies, but consuming balanced meals that include a mix of protein, healthy fats, and fiber-rich carbs, much of which we constantly recommend to clients and to the listeners of this podcast. These nutrients contribute to satiety and helps maintain stable blood sugar levels, which can help some of those dysregulating patterns of hunger signals. Regular meal timing can help as well. Sticking to regular meal times and avoiding prolonged periods of fasting, which can disrupt hunger hormones and lead to overeating later, can be a good way to maintain healthy appetite regulation. It also improves your circadian rhythm, which can improve sleep, which can improve cortisol, which can also improve these things. And as you can start to pinpoint and put together, by the time we get to the end of this podcast, you're going to realize that all of these hormones kind of indirectly or directly link to one another, making it really helpful if all of them are in sync and balanced. And when they're all in sync and balanced, you can begin to realize that when you optimize one, you begin to optimize them all. Next is mindful eating. Pay attention to hunger, fullness, cues, satiety, all these kind of things, and just eat slowly to allow time for signals in satiety to reach the brain and for you to actually be aware of what these signals are and pay attention to them. Getting adequate sleep is really important as well because sleep deprivation can disrupt hunger hormones and lead to increased appetite. Stress management is crucial as well because anytime we have stress, we're going to have higher cortisol and that can directly impact ghrelin and leptin, but implementing any type of stress reducing techniques, you know, can lower the chances of stress impacting ghrelin and ultimately just stop triggering emotional eating, which, as we know, is the primary reason why high cortisol levels prolonged over a long period of time can actually cause becoming overweight. It's because adherence and stress eating don't mix. Hydration is important as well. Just because drinking enough water throughout the day can help you avoid dehydration, which can be mistaken for hunger. So when you have a high level of dehydration, which is going to happen from not drinking enough water or not having enough sodium in the diet, it can just be mistaken for hunger. If you're not familiar with your hunger cues or your body cues in general, you want to reduce the intake of highly processed and really just sugary foods in general, like junk food. We know that with flexible dieting, you can fit anything into your diet and still lose weight and still, you know, be healthy and everything, but they can dysregulate and disrupt hunger hormones and promote overeating more easily than whole foods. And that's really important. You need control and you need to be experienced in order to fit those kind of foods into your flexible diet. Making sure you're engaging in training often and just regular physical activity in general can have a really positive effect and influence on your appetite regulation. And last but not least, just monitoring your portions, which we always promote with tracking your calories and macros and just being aware of what you're consuming and planning ahead. By focusing on all these strategies, you can support healthy appetite regulation pretty easily. It'll also improve your adherence to your nutrition plan and promote overall well-being, which is going to lead you to your goal of fat loss or muscle growth. As with any hormonal and dietary aspect, it can tweak and adjust mainly from a standpoint of you might be getting great sleep, being super mindful and have regular meal timing, but maybe you're dehydrated or maybe you're not limiting processed foods or maybe you're not training hard enough. It's important to think about all these things, not just one. Estrogen and progesterone are next, and the impact they have on fat gain and muscle growth isn't as prevalent as some of these other hormones, but it is important, especially for women. So we're going to cover that. First is the impact on fat storage. Estrogen influences fat storage and distribution in the body. Women tend to have higher body fat percentages than men, and this is partly due to estrogen's role in promoting fat storage in areas such as the hips, thighs, and breasts. Estrogen promotes the storage of fat in subcutaneous, which is under the skin, tissues, which is associated with the female, quote-unquote, pear-shaped body. Estrogen also plays a role in muscle growth, though its effects are not nearly as pronounced as testosterone is in men. Estrogen supports muscle maintenance and repair and contributes to overall muscle growth and strength, as well as function in both men and women. So it is important, but it just doesn't play nearly the same role as testosterone does. Progesterone doesn't have a significant direct impact on fat storage. However, it does play a crucial role in supporting pregnancy and the development of the embryo, as well as other hormonal processes in both men and women. So progesterone is fairly important for general health and recreation, but it's not really a fat or muscle growth hormone per se. However, if you do have fluctuations or imbalances in progesterone, there can be downstream indirect effects that could cause other hormones, which do have an effect on body composition. What about the menstrual cycle, right? And this is where we have fluctuations in estrogen and progesterone. So specifically for the women. In women, estrogen and progesterone levels fluctuate throughout the menstrual cycle. During the follicular phase, which is the first half of the cycle, estrogen levels gradually increase, leading to ovulation. After ovulation, during the luteal phase, which is the second half of the cycle, both estrogen and progesterone levels rise. These hormonal fluctuations can impact nutrient partitioning, metabolism, and even energy expenditure. Some women may experience increased fat utilization during the follicular phase and decreased fat burning during the luteal phase. Additionally, progesterone may contribute to water retention and bloating during the luteal phase, which I will say could be mistaken for fat gain due to a period. It's not fat gain, it is purely water retention. It's also important to note that there have been studies and meta-analyses on menstrual cycles causing differences in strength training and all these different things. And there hasn't been any notice of these changes. So it doesn't change your performance, your strength, or your muscle building components. Can it increase fat utilization and fat burning? Potentially. And that's why we put that in here, because there is some research to point to that. However, there's not much to suggest it changes much with muscle growth or performance during the menstrual cycle. And therefore, it could be a fluctuation that essentially cancels each other out and be not really worth paying attention to. Most of the time, what I recommend women really pay attention to during their menstrual cycle is actually just cravings. So potentially taking a deload or diet break if you're stressed, you're tired, you're fatigued, or you're experiencing more cravings, rather than, you know, completely stop the diet or think that you can't diet during a period or can't train hard during your period. That's not the case. The last thing we'll cover with progesterone and estrogen is menopause. In women, as they enter menopause, estrogen levels decrease significantly. This hormonal change can lead to changes in fat distribution, with more fat accumulation around the abdominal area. Estrogen decline may also impact muscle mass maintenance and overall body composition. In men, as they age, testosterone levels tend to decline gradually, which may affect muscle mass and increase fat accumulation. Moreover, as estrogen levels decrease in aging men, a relative increase in estrogen compared to testosterone levels may lead to similar issues with fat distribution and muscle maintenance. In conclusion on menopause, estrogen and progesterone, while more prominent in their effects in women, also have physiological relevance in men. These hormones play a role in fat storage and distribution and have some influence on muscle growth and maintenance. Fluctuations in estrogen and progesterone, particularly during the menstrual cycle in women and during aging in both men and women, can impact how the body burns fat and builds muscle to an extent, but it's not worth writing home over. Understanding these hormonal changes can be helpful, but it's something, again, that we don't need to over glamorize or overhype up or pay too much attention to, especially with estrogen and progesterone. Estrogen more so for women, progesterone almost not at all for either men or women. Moving on, we have the last hormone of the podcast, and that's growth hormone and how it impacts fat metabolism and muscle development. The fat loss process. Growth hormone is a peptide hormone produced by the pituitary gland in the brain. It plays a crucial role in fat metabolism by promoting lipolysis, which is the breakdown of stored triglycerides or fat into free fatty acids and glycerol. These free fatty acids can then be utilized as an energy source by the body. Growth hormone stimulates the activity of hormone-sensitive lipase, which is an enzyme responsible for breaking down fat cells to release these fatty acids. And as a result, growth hormone helps increase fat oxidation, which is fat burning, and reduces fat storage, contributing to the fat loss process, making growth hormone a pretty important hormone when it comes to fat loss. What about muscle growth? Well, growth hormone also plays a significant role in muscle development for hypertrophy. But as I stated earlier, the effects of it on fat loss tend to be a little bit greater, especially when we are looking at, and this is where we see more of this being prominent, super physiological ranges. So if you, not something I've ever personally experienced, but I've read and seen enough about, when a bodybuilder introduces growth hormone as a supplement, it is really helpful in fat loss. But again, it does help with hypertrophy. And it does this by stimulating the production of insulin-like growth factor 1. IGF-1 is what people usually refer to it as, in the liver and in other tissues. IGF-1 is a crucial factor in muscle repair and growth, as it enhances protein synthesis and amino acid uptake into the muscle cells, which promotes anabolic environments. So just really just the whole muscle building process. This is why growth hormone is often considered an anabolic hormone, as it supports muscle tissue repair and growth after exercise-induced damage. So primarily, it's something that's going to help us with fat loss and fat metabolism, so utilizing fat as fuel to burn off, as well as maintaining and muscle by recovering more optimally. What are the natural ways to enhance growth hormone secretion for those of us who really don't feel like injecting it, which I would assume is most of us? High-intensity exercise is the first one. Engaging in high-intensity resistance training and anaerobic exercises, which isn't just high-intensity cardio, but it can be things like short bursts of sprints and such, but it also happens with powerlifting, weightlifting, bodybuilding, stuff like that, can have a pretty significant boost in growth hormone secretion. Adequate sleep is huge. Growth hormone is primarily released during sleep, and especially deep sleep, the stages of deep sleep. So aiming for 7 to 9 hours is really important here, and especially with good high-quality sleep. L-arginine and L-ornithine, I always butcher that one, are two amino acids that have been shown to stimulate growth hormone release. Foods rich in these are just meats, fish, nuts, and seeds. You can also supplement with them, but it's probably not as profound of an effect when you supplement with them. Protein in general, protein-rich foods, especially those high in the amino acids like leucine and those above, are also going to support growth hormone secretion, which is, you know, it's one of those things where it's kind of the basics. And this is what I often tell people about hormones in general. If you do all the basics and you do them really well and really consistently, you're probably going to cover most of your bases with this stuff. The next one is avoiding too many calories right before bed. If you have too many calories before bed, it's going to cause, really, it's just, you may blunt the growth hormone release during sleep because you're going to have high blood sugar levels and then you're going to have really poor sleep. And poor sleep, as we know, is going to lower growth hormone secretion. So it's just important to make sure you're not eating too close to bed to where it disturbs your sleep and therefore you can't produce as much growth hormone while you're sleeping. Reducing stress is really important because chronic stress can actually suppress growth hormone secretion. So incorporating stress reducing practices before bed can be helpful, or doing like a contrast shower, or simply just making your bedroom environment really positive and helpful for deep sleep. And then most importantly is just going to be maintaining all these habits as well as a healthy body composition, because growth hormone secretion tends to be higher in individuals with lower body fat percentages and higher muscle mass. So you need to make sure that you don't need to be shredded, but you want to make sure that you're not getting yourself to a point where you're over fat. Make sure you're lean, because being lean is going to optimize your hormones. Being shredded won't, but being lean absolutely will. So what did this really all boil down to? Because that's how we're going to wrap up this, right? Because, you know, in conclusion of this podcast, hormones obviously play a big role, right? There's a lot of reasons why hormones are important. There's also a lot of reasons why people take it too far, because it's sexy. And you can talk about hormones in a way that is very marketable. It's very exciting. It gets people fired up. You can pitch supplements with it. You can do all kinds of fancy nutrient timing. All these things that I talked about can be glamorized in a way that can be sold. But if we really boil down everything I talked about today, it's all very simple strategies that just need to be done consistently. And if you do these things consistently over time, you're going to find that you're going to support your body's hormonal production in a really favorable way. And what that's going to do is lead to an optimal environment for health, recovery, muscle growth, body fat loss, and so much more. So what I really want you to focus on is strength training hard, getting lean, eating a diet that is not exclusive, but inclusive of protein, carbs, and fats. You're going to need to make sure that you're getting the right kinds of fats, carbs, and proteins. You're going to need to make sure that you're recovering optimally by managing stress and generally practicing these healthy habits. If you do that, you're going to be covering all your bases. If you are still low in testosterone, in thyroid production, in any of these hormones, if you're still having hormonal issues, it means that you may need a little bit more help with some of these factors. You may not be getting enough of certain kinds of foods, or maybe you have a blind spot and you're not seeing something that's there. And in that case, you should seek out a professional, whether that's a doctor or a nutritionist. But nonetheless, if you follow these things specifically, I can almost promise you that you're going to consistently get leaner and build more muscle. And those two things are going to happen more significantly when your hormones are optimal. But also, it's a constant loop, because as you do those things, you're also going to optimize your hormones, right? Optimizing your hormones helps you lose fat and build muscle, but losing fat and building muscle also helps you optimize your hormones. So we don't want to use this like a steroid. You're not going to implement a strategy and see this big growth sensation. You're going to see a little bit of improvements, and those improvements are going to help you lose fat and build muscle, which is also going to improve your hormones more. And it's an ongoing flow. So just focus on the basics, focus on them well, and do it consistently over time. And you will seriously optimize your hormones in the long run. So I hope that you enjoyed this podcast. I hope that you learned something new. I hope I confirmed something that you knew or were wondering. And I hope that I can help you steer in the right direction to avoid some of the BS that's out there. As always, I appreciate you guys listening, and I will catch you next time.